Hello and welcome back to Our Bodies, Our Stories. Today we're going to be talking about the history of racism in reproductive healthcare. Racism continues to affect marginalized communities in today's healthcare system.
In order to combat racism within the healthcare industry, the first step is to start talking about these harmful practices.
We also want to provide a trigger warning. We're going to be talking about healthcare-based crimes that have historically affected marginalized people. Feel free to skip this episode if this could be potentially triggering to you.
Also, it is important to acknowledge that this research we refer to in this podcast episode was done with people who identify as women, and this research did not acknowledge or focus on other gender identities. We acknowledge that reproductive health and justice affects all birthing people, not just women, but the research was done under the assumption of the gender binary.
To begin with, we want to talk a little bit about the history of contraceptives. In the mid-1950s, birth control pills were tested on as many as 1,500 women in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and for those of you that may be wondering, Puerto Rico was chosen as a testing ground because there were no explicit laws against birth control testing among the population.
Exactly. So the United States wanted to control the population growth and reproductive rate in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and so women took the birth control pill thinking they'd gain control over family planning, but they were not informed of the many potential risks. In fact, 3 women died during the trial phase, and others experienced nausea and blood clots.
After the trials, the pill was made available for American women who were desperate to have access to discreet birth control. I think it's just important for us to recognize that the birth control pill is a result of racist and unethical research practices.
Yeah, and I think it's always important to just acknowledge the history of something that's been commonly used today, especially when it is the result of the suffering of marginalized groups.
I agree.
Yeah. And so another form of birth control that was employed to control a marginalized population was the forced sterilization of Indigenous women in the United States.
During the 6-year period following the passage of the Family Planning Services and Population Research Act of 1970, physicians sterilized about 25% of Indigenous women of childbearing age in the U.S., and there's evidence suggesting that these numbers were actually higher.
And a lot of these procedures were performed without people's knowledge or consent. So the background of that is when the federal government forced Indigenous peoples onto reservations during the 19th century, the Indigenous population in the U.S. faced several public health disasters. So by 1900, the population consisted of less than 250,000 people. Infants and children were especially vulnerable to illness and death. And in fact, one government official estimated in 1916 that approximately 3/5 of Indigenous infants died before the age of 5.
And on so many reservations, women responded by bearing more children despite their compromised health. The historian Frederick Hoxie has argued that only the maintenance of extraordinarily high birth rates saved one nation from dropping into oblivion. Like, it's scary to think about.
No, it is, because it's eugenics. Like, this is eugenics. And in an attempt to decrease these birth rates, the federal government tried to discourage midwives and their birthing knowledge. So more Indigenous women in the U.S. began giving birth in hospitals. And then this is where the forced sterilization started to happen.
You know how you read books and watch movies about dystopian worlds and you think, wow, this is so scary. Imagine living in this kind of world. And then you read stuff like this and you think that this is our past. This isn't like a distant future or some...
It's a reality and part of our history that I don't think a lot of people like to acknowledge and honestly enjoy ignoring.
So going back to the act, the way it actually worked was that the IHS claimed that they were providing family planning services for Indigenous people while they were actually just sterilizing them.
And FYI, the IAH stands for the Indian Health Service. It is a still operating division within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and it's responsible for providing direct medical and public health services to members of federally recognized U.S. Indigenous tribes and Alaska Native people.
So many problems with that. I didn't know it was still functioning today.
And the fact that they haven't changed their name either, it is pretty common knowledge now that you should not refer to Indigenous people in America as Indians. And yet they are still doing it. And even on their website at the top, it says, quote, the federal health program for American Indians and Alaska Natives, unquote.
It's problematic and also just generally incorrect information.
During this time that we're talking about, while the IH was first operating, eugenics that I was talking about earlier also surged. In fact, Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. wrote, quote, it is better for all the world if instead of waiting to execute degenerate offspring for a crime or to let them starve for their imbecility, society can prevent those who are manifestly unfit from continuing their kind, unquote.
It's so hard to believe that this happened. We really don't talk about it enough. It's like the uglier side of history just gets overlooked without understanding the ramifications that it still has on people today.
Because there could have been children that were born during, like, following these years, during, like, 1920s, right after this was said, that could still be alive today. They would be quite old, but they would still be alive today, and they would remember this, which is terrifying.
And even if you don't remember it, even if you're not, if you weren't there for this time, it's like these problems are so deep rooted into the system that it's so hard to overcome biases in today's healthcare.
Yeah, for sure. And the more, as you mentioned, like the glossing over of history, I actually experienced this in high school. We were preparing for the AP US history exam, and one of the questions had one of my friends include an argument about slavery in the US. So this friend mentioned how racism was created as a justification for slavery. And then for some reason, their score dropped dramatically, despite doing well in the multiple choice section and on other essays. And I find it very interesting that as soon as they bring up how racism was created, suddenly they receive a failing score.
Wow, that's so scary. All of this is scary. Can you imagine that this is the justification that was used for sterilizing indigenous people in the US? They said that they viewed them as degenerate and didn't want them to continue reproducing. Some IHS doctors did not believe that both the minority women had the intelligence to use other methods of birth control effectively, unquote.
Yeah, and while sterilization procedures should have only been presented as one of the many contraceptive options by doctors, Indigenous women in the U.S. were often coerced into signing forms or given incorrect information about their options. And so that's where the ideas of like informed consent come up that is really predominant in today's healthcare system. That wasn't a thing at all back when these Indigenous women were trying to make contraceptive decisions.
This just shows you how access to knowledge can be used as a form of power and as a tool against people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people would go into hospitals for completely different medical procedures or prescriptions and come out sterile because doctors would sterilize them while they were under anesthesia or prescribe them medication claiming it was pain medication and it actually made them infertile.
And that is so scary. And I think one of the worst parts of it is that it's all of this is still a very much present day reality, less in the healthcare system. But even current non-intersectional reproductive rights / health, not reproductive justice, movements actively exclude Black and Indigenous people.
Yeah, so many times we talk about these things and think about it as something that's in the past and something that we don't need to talk about, but it is still very much present today.
Yeah. And all of these statistics that we've just given y'all can be really overwhelming, but it's important to remember that these were real people that were affected by these laws and institutions. It is more than just a statistic or a quote or a fact. These were people. They are people. Reproductive justice movements are still known to exclude Black and Indigenous people in the US. So it's important to acknowledge that and fight for equitable justice for all people.
Yeah, the thing you said about it being just a statistic, I think so many of these historical narratives are intentionally dehumanized in order to avoid us thinking about the ramifications of it. And I think it's important to recenter these ideas with the stories and lives of the people that were directly affected.
Exactly.
Sadly, this wasn't just the case with Indigenous people in the US. The mortality rate of Black mothers in the United States is also highly indicative of systemic racism.
According to the CDC, Black mothers in the U.S. die at 3 to 4 times the rate of white mothers, or, in other words, are 243% more likely to die from pregnancy or childbirth-related causes than a white woman is.
this disparity has existed for a long time, but you would think it would be improving nowadays. But in some places, it is the opposite. It's getting even worse.
Yeah, in New York City, according to the most recent data, Black mothers are 12 times more likely to die than white mothers, while in 2001 to 2005, their risk of death was 7 times higher.
A 2016 analysis of 5 years of data also found that Black college-educated mothers who gave birth in local hospitals were more likely to suffer complications of pregnancy or childbirth than white women who never graduated from high school.
Yeah, and the hospitals where these women would give birth at are often the products of historical segregation. They were worse quality than those where white mothers deliver, which leads to significantly higher rates of life-threatening complications.
And these problems are furthered by unconscious and sometimes conscious biases that healthcare providers hold. There have been several instances in which Black pregnant people have felt pain and expressed it to their healthcare providers, and the healthcare provider did not believe them until it was too late.
I think that really stems from the idea that Black people, for some reason, have a higher pain tolerance and thicker skin than other people, which is just simply untrue and false.
Studies have also shown that the stress from microaggressions and racism throughout a person's life can lead to negative outcomes during pregnancy.
Yeah, the term for that is weathering.
And also, the prejudice that Black people face in healthcare settings makes them less likely to attend necessary doctor's appointments, including postpartum visits.
Yeah, so I think we can all agree that this is a major issue that needs to be addressed in healthcare. Healthcare should not be a threatening place for pregnant people. For people looking to give birth, they should have a safe environment where they can do so without having to worry about this.
Yeah, this lack of safe and accessible healthcare for BIPOC is something that we need to address immediately.
These problems result predominantly from internalized biases and flaws in the U.S. healthcare system, as well as just general racism in the U.S.
It's not enough to just not be racist. Everyone needs to be actively anti-racist. Call out racism when you see it and have the ability to do so.
And also, try not to support healthcare providers that are known to discriminate against people based on their identity. If you have a discriminatory experience and are comfortable and able to switch providers and would like to share that experience, it can help the community know who not to support.
Finally, if you're going into the healthcare field in any way, it's important to keep this racist and discriminatory past of healthcare in mind. There's a reason people distrust the healthcare system. It is your responsibility as a provider to regain people's trust and provide culturally aware and affirming care.
Yeah, exactly. And so, thank you so much for listening to this episode. We know we talked about a lot of terrible things that have happened in the past. And if you need support or would like more resources information, make sure to check out our Instagram and website at rjvela and at vela-no.org.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and make sure to subscribe.